Welcome back to the Bob Pritchard Straight Talking Radio Show, where over the past 8 years, we've given you an insight into the lives of somewhere around 400 of the world's most interesting business people. We've talked about the services they provide and the challenges they've faced, how they've overcome those challenges. But behind it all, we try to find out what it is that makes them tick. It's extremely difficult to create a successful business. Only about 2 in every 100 startup businesses succeed. So we want to try and find out what it is that those 2 that succeed do that the 98 that fail don't do. And I've mentioned this a number of times, but it is extremely important for small businesses, startups, entrepreneurs to surround themselves with mentors, people that have that they can come on board with the business and give you straight advice, people that have done it before, people that preferably have been in your type of industry before and know the pitfalls and know what you need to do. It can make a hell of a difference to your success. I've had mentors for probably 30 years, and the same people have mentored me all the way through. And it's, I would have made millions of mistakes. I have made millions of mistakes, but I would have made millions more if I hadn't have had good mentors. Evan Hackel is CEO of Tortal Training. That's a leading training development company. And he's the principal and founder of Engage Consulting, which is Ingage, which is kind of cute. He's the host of Training Unleashed podcasts, the author of the book Engaging Leadership. And guess what? He's a speaker, like most of us. He speaks on seeking excellence, better together, engaging leadership, and attitude is everything. Hi, Evan. Welcome to the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. You're being heard right across the world.
I am very happy to be here. Very happy to be here.
Where are you right at the moment?
I am outside of Boston, Massachusetts, as we speak.
Okay. I went over there just recently for just a few days. I actually gave a speech and then had a few days break. It's a great part of the world, but you can have the cold.
But want to ski, Bob? So it's okay by me. I'll take the call.
Yeah, but you got to work. That's the trouble. You know, snow and cold's fun for about the first hour and a half until you have to start shoveling it, and then all of a sudden it wears thin real quick. What's the difference between a leader and a manager? Is one simply a leader, someone who motivates and drags people along through sheer adrenaline, and a manager is somebody who sits there with a grey suit and a grey tie and a grey shirt and grey hair and plots graphs. What's the difference?
Well, it's interesting you describe it that way, because I think if you ask somebody, you know, would you prefer to be a leader or would you prefer to be a manager? Everybody go, I want to be a leader. Who would want to be a manager? I think if you ask an employee a question, would you rather be inspired and motivated, or would you be rather be told what to do? And everyone go, yeah, I want to be inspired and motivated. So everyone grasps that they need to be, you know, they want to be a leader. They want to be inspired. They want to be motivated.
Right.
But the reality is, you know, both organizations need both.
Right.
Right. You need vision. You need inspiration. You need passion. At the same token, you got to do the job. At the same token, you got to be organized. You have to have systems. You have to have procedures.
Sure.
So you can't just be one or the other unless you're big enough, right?
Thank
Large
you.
Corporations, you know, a good example of this is Apple, right?
Right.
Steve Jobs could be the most innovative, the most dynamic leader in the world because he had Tim Cook, and Tim Cook did the day-to-day.
Yeah, and he could be a total asshole as a manager.
Yeah, right. And so, but, you know, if you're a normal corporation, like most of the people listening here, you know, you don't have a person who's, you know, a full-time CEO leader who then has got a COO manager, that's operating. But every business needs to have vision, have direction, know where they're going, and also needs to have a manager that sits back and you know, does budgets, sits down with people, does planning, sets, you know, goals, you know, the common term KPIs or metrics.
Yep.
Of what where people need to go, and you have to have both skills, but they're both very different skill sets. And it's very normal, and what, you know, go back to why do businesses fail, that a person is one or the other, right? One,
yeah.
You know, they're a great leader, they got a great vision, but they're, you know, they're not really good at crossing the I's and dotting the T's. And, you know, for a while they can get by with that. And then in another case, you got a person that's really great at, you know, running the day-to-day practices of the business, but doesn't have that vision. So, you know, the person with the vision grows fast and then crumbles, and the person without the vision runs a really sturdy business that never grows.
Right.
And so, and that's why businesses need both, and they can be, you know, I've got two part. I mean, they can be two different people, but ideally they need to be one, and you need to understand the importance of doing both roles.
Isn't it really difficult to find a leader? I mean, how often does a Jobs or a Musk or someone come along? And aren't they born? Don't they sort of pop out of the womb and they're all of a sudden leading a procession down the maternity ward hallway?
Yeah, I'm going to differ with you there. I don't think they're born. Yeah, are some born? Sure. I think people can learn leadership skills. I think people can learn, you know, people that have experience in business that are properly mentored, properly coached, you know, read the right business books. I mean, I'll plug my own book, Engaging Leadership with an Eye. You know, if you read that book, it gives you the clues and the keys on how to be a great leader. And I think that people can be inspired and build leadership skills. You know, understand something. Leadership isn't necessarily about giving that powerful, dynamic speech that gets everyone, you know, riled up and excited. You know, leadership is about having a passion, about having a vision of where you want a company to go. And that doesn't mean that the person's got to be the most inspiring. You know, maybe, you know, someone who's naturally inspiring that gives the speech. I mean, as I'm sitting here talking, I'm thinking about the movie Animal House when, you know, they're in the middle of the hearing and the guy gets up and starts going on and on, and this is un-American, and then they all march out, you know, following this great speech.
Yeah.
You know, there are very few of those type of people in this world.
Yeah.
But somebody that can sit back and see a vision of where a company can go and inspire people to want to make that happen. You know, I think these are skill sets that can be learned.
I would have thought that were two totally different types of personality. Somebody that's can inspire a team of people to get out and run through a brick wall.
There are people that can inspire a team of people that are not great leaders. You know, if you're an inspirational person, you're listening to somebody that gets you all excited, they got you all pumped up, but they haven't given you a direction of what to do and where to go and what's the flag in the ground for a business, right? Where's that business going? You know, what do we need to do to be in lockstep to get to where we're going?
Yeah.
That's leadership, is defining that vision. And you can rah-rah somebody all you want. I mean, and you see this happen in companies all the time. We need more sales. Someone gives an inspiring speech. We need to, you know, we need to go talk to more customers. We need to do this. We need to do all these things without really creating a vision. You know, and a vision is a very powerful thing. A vision is more than just simply a goal. It's a why it matters. It's the essence of a purpose and something that there can be shared power around, something that the customers get, the staff get, the people get, that what you're doing is important beyond the materialistic vision of, you know, let's just make some money.
Although
it's nice to make some money.
Can anybody learn to be a manager?
anybody willing to be a manager? I got to tell you something. I think it's harder to be a good manager than it is to be a good leader.
Yeah,
because there's an art to being a manager where you're sitting back and really coaching people, helping people, holding people accountable, but doing it in a way that motivates them.
Yeah.
You know, and so many people like, gee, you know, I'm a manager and I'm going to get back for every time someone inappropriately abused me with power. You know, most managers, all they do is they look for what you did wrong. You spend all your time looking, what's wrong, wrong. You know, you did this, Bob, you did this wrong, you did this wrong, Bob, you did this wrong, you did this wrong. And that's why, you know, I talk about a lot, and this is in my, you know, my speech on positiveness, it's in my book, The Rule of Five, which is a good manager catches someone doing five things right and acknowledges five times for every one thing that they see that needs improvement.
Right.
And the reason this is important is that if you're managing someone, you don't want them running. I remember stories about a client that I had that when the CEO came into the building, I'm like, you know, everyone was looking to hide. You know, no one was walking in the hall. They're all at their desks with their heads down because they didn't want to talk to this guy. Because when he would walk by, all he would do is rag on you. And when people get acknowledged for what they're doing right, and then when they see that person who's 5-1 telling them that they're doing a great job, they love talking to them because it's much more likely the person is going to say something positive than negative.
Yeah.
And then when they say something that is constructive, because they saw them do so many things that are right, they're really going to listen. And because they know how much this person cares, and they know how this person knows how good they are at what they do.
Yeah, and so, it keeps everybody motivated.
Yeah, it does. And I think that's a hard skill set to develop. And it's certainly, you know, contrary to what you watch on TV. You know, I think TV is one of the greatest training tools in the world on life. Unfortunately, it just trains us all on the wrong things to be and how to behave. that's the problem. But, I mean, we get so much by watching. You know, I remember as a kid watching Bewitched, and most of the people listening probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But, you know, in the show, Darren is always scared of what his boss is going to want.
Yeah.
Just does anything his boss ever asks. He doesn't want to get fired, etc. And you know, I'm picking on that show, but you know, this is culture is taught through our entertainment, and you know, a lot of the things, you know, with the Me Too movement today are a direct result of culture being taught on television. You know, where television shows show behavior, which you watch today, and you go, oh my God, I can't believe they did this on this TV show.
And so.
You know, it's a great teacher. It's just teaching the wrong things.
It's more important now, I guess, because we've got a really tight labor force. We can't supply enough people to fill jobs, and that's forcing up. That's making more competition for employees and forcing up wages. So, I guess having business skills is critical to keep those people, but having leadership skills is important to make sure they don't go and bolt and go to the competition.
You know, I'm glad you brought this up because this is a very, very important topic to me. We have to stop thinking in terms of wages. And you know, we think, oh, we pay this person, you know, $15 an hour, we pay this person $25 an hour. We need to think in terms of productivity.
Sure.
Because you can pay one person the same wage, and one person's going to do twice as much work as the other person. And so it's not what you're paying them, it's what you're getting. And so some companies just insist on, hey, we're just going to pay the lowest market wage. Because, you know, everybody, you know, we're in a tough industry, you know, particularly people like in fast food restaurants and people working in retail. And their whole goal is to pay as little as humanly possible, because they're trying to keep payroll down to a set percentage of revenue. And I would argue that percentage of revenue is very, in fact, relevant. But it isn't necessarily the goal by paying people less. If you have better people that are more productive, that get more done, and you pay them more and you don't lose them, you're going to make a lot more money.
Yeah.
So it's very short-sighted to just simply look and say, what are we paying people? You know, let's look at, and you know, depending on what they're doing, you know, what's their output? You know, if they're working in a hotel and they're cleaning rooms, for instance, how many rooms do they clean, you know, an hour?
Yeah.
You know, what if you change if you can change the dynamic with the right people, and they can clean twice as many rooms in an hour as by hiring the people that would accept the job at the pay you wish to pay. Well, is that bad? I mean, it's easier to manage half the number of people. Your benefits are half, and you're paying them twice as much, but they're doing twice the work. I would argue a company's far better off doing it that way than it is simply trying to hire people at the lowest possible amount.
And I guess this is where you need to be a good manager, because if you've got a number of people all doing the same job, all doing the same job but not necessarily the same productivity, but all getting different levels of income, then you're likely to have a war on your hands, aren't you?
Well, you know, the problem is, if you simply pay people a lot, but you don't manage them well, you don't look at what they're doing for productivity, you're not a good manager. You're exactly right. You're a bad manager. And you know, people need to know what you're, you know, it's amazing. I talk to so many people. I know you talk to so many people. You go, do people know what you expect?
Yeah.
That's just that simple. Do they know? No, they don't know. They, no one tells them.
Yeah. That's,
you know,
true.
I'm talking about hotels because I was, last month I was hired by a fairly major hotel organization, you know, with thousands and thousands of hotels, and I spent a lot of time talking to people, and you sit back and you just shake your head and go, huh, how do you expect someone to be happy at work when they have no idea what success is?
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you hire someone and you don't tell them, here's our expectations, and by the way, here's how you're doing versus your expectations, how do they know they're doing a good job?
Yeah.
And, you know, then they get frustrated and they leave, because, you know, who wants to work in a place where you're doing a miserable job that's tough to do, and you have no idea if you're successful, and people are only spending their time complaining about what you're doing poorly?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work.
No, that makes a lot of sense. So I'm sitting out there and I'm starting up a new business and I'm about to create a business plan. And what are the most important things that I should be looking at to put in that business strategy?
Well, the key thing you have to sit back is and say to yourself is, what am I doing that's better than what other people do? What's the competition doing? What's my niche? What do I do that's better? What's my unique proposition? And what is my vision for where this company needs to be going to be successful? And if you're, you know, look at there, that's not to say you can't have a business that, you know, does what other people do. It's just, if you do, just expect it to be that.
Yeah.
So let's say, just for instance, you know, that you're an electrician and you want to start a business as an electrician, and you know, basically the work is going to be maybe you and an assistant, and your goal is just to be an electrician and find some business. You know, do you need to have this differentiator and thing I just described? Probably not. But let's just say, for the sake of argument, you're looking to build a really great business, which is what I think you're talking about.
Sure.
Then you got to sit back and say, what do other people do? What will I do differently? Why will it matter to people? You know, it always makes sense before you start to validate. You know, I know people, oh, yeah, I'm going to open up a consulting business. Great. Before you open up a consulting business, get a couple clients. And they go, what do you mean? I go, well, how am I going to get clients if I don't have a website? I don't have this, I don't have that. look at, figure out what you're going to consult on, why it's going to be different, talk to people. And if you can't, before you open, have a few clients, maybe this isn't the business to be in.
Yeah.
And so having that differentiator, knowing what it is, having a clear vision of where you're going, then doing the math, understanding what it's going to cost. You know, it's interesting, and I haven't checked the statistic in years, but so I hate, you know, being the people that give bad facts, but I did check the statistic at one time, and more people go out of business because they're doing too much business than too little. And they don't understand the issue and the impact of cash flow. They don't understand if they have to buy inventory that if you have a business that's making, you know, let's say a 10% profit, which is pretty nice. But your average person pays you in 90 days and you have inventory that's equivalent to, you know, a couple months sales. You can grow your business, but your cash will, you know, it's not like you're buying things that are worthless. You're buying good things, but you're going to spend a lot more buying inventory and a lot more funding receivables than you're going to earn in profits.
And a lot of businesses are seasonal too, and people don't plan their cash flow. So all of a sudden business just drops off because of seasonal reasons. And your income drops off, and all of a sudden you've got mouths to feed, and you're in trouble.
That's exactly right. Which is why it's important to do financial planning and to sit back and, you know, realize what the impact of the business is, and to be properly funded to get started.
Yeah, of course that's difficult. If you're a starting a small business. Then one of the biggest problems that I see when I talk to small businesses is that whoever is the principal of the business, the guy who invented whatever they're going to do, has to all of a sudden be not only the inventor but the HR person and the accountant and the lawyer, and he's got 57 roles all of a sudden, most of which they have absolutely no experience in doing. So how do you address that if you're a small business? Do you hire? Should the entrepreneur be the sort of inspirer?
Bob, let's play a game.
Okay.
Give me a business that somebody wants to start, and I'm going to answer your question.
Okay. I want to start a car sales yard. I want to sell cars.
A car?
Yeah, I want to sell cars. So I start off with a small yard, and I've got half a dozen cars that I want to
sell. You want to sell used cars?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's interesting because people can do this today so much easier than they could do it before. I know people that, you know, this is what they do for a living. They sell them on Craigslist, et cetera, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And, okay, so what I would tell you is if you really want to be in the used car business, go work for a used car dealer.
Right.
Take a job maybe you wouldn't normally take, and maybe you're only going to start with 6 or 10 or 15 cars. Go work for somebody bigger and learn the business. Learn and see what happens. See the ins and outs. See what their best practices are in terms of sales technique. See what they do to finance their vehicle, what they do to acquire their vehicle. Learn the business, then go start your own business.
To learn
on your own is very expensive. Is that to say that someone can't be successful just starting it and doing it themselves? No, you can be. It's all about risk.
But only 2 in 100 are going to be successful.
That's exactly right. So, you know, if you want to start a restaurant, I cook. I love cooking. I'll be, you should start a restaurant.
Yeah, that's an easy.
And I think to myself, I want to work every night. Yeah, I want to work every night. I want to work every weekend. No, but if I was ever going to start a restaurant, the first thing I would do is work in a restaurant because I've never worked in a restaurant. Just because I like cooking and it's a hobby for me doesn't mean I'm going to be good at it. So, you know, if I'm an electrician, you know, I just, you know, I accept your penis, you know, I want to spend time working in electrical, you know, for someone to learn the trade. I mean, the other alternative is to buy into a franchise.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of franchises are excellent, excellent vehicles for people to get going. And they definitely reduce risk in terms of success, you know, at the get-go, at the beginning, for sure. That's not to say they aren't with risk.
Yeah.
And I think there's a misnomer to think you buy a franchise and you buy complete safety. That's not true. You still have to be competent, and you still have to make sure you buy the right franchise, one that works for you, meaning you have the skill set to do it, and one where you have a really good quality franchisor. Not all franchisors are great.
Yeah.
A lot of them are great. But, you know, that's if someone says, gee, I have a little money, I want to do something, then, you know, that's a great way, because you're getting the best practices, you're getting the help, you're getting all of those kind of basic things.
I guess a restaurant's a pretty good example, because you might think you're a pretty good cook. You might be a pretty good cook. And you're terrific at whipping up meals for your wife. You know, she's absolutely thrilled with the food she gets every night. However, when you open a restaurant and you've got scale, and you've got to buy the right amount of food, you can't throw food out, you've got all that management, it's a whole different ballgame, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, I'll give you myself as an example. Every now and then I go and I run a kitchen for a weekend and I cook food for 70 people, three meals a day for basically 3.5 days. Okay. So that's a pretty big challenge and I love it. It's intellectually great. Has no relevance to my ability to run a restaurant. None.
Right.
You know, you run a restaurant, you know, you need to have people that are tested and have gone through ServSafe. You know, restaurants make money making soup because they're using all their scraps, all their leftovers. They're turning food that's waste into money.
Yeah.
Portion control, all the, you know, how you make meals that taste great, that are priced right, that you make good margin on, how you upsell appetizers, alcohol, you know, all these things are very complicated. And, you know, rightly or wrongly, it's much more difficult to be successful today than it was, you know, 50 years ago or 60
Absolutely.
Years ago.
Absolutely.
Every business has become more difficult, more complex, because people keep getting better, better, and better.
Yeah. And there's more and more of them. And more and more people want to be their own boss than ever did before.
Yeah, and how do you find a site for a restaurant that's the right site?
Yeah.
You know, but if I went to work for a restaurant, I wouldn't go to work for a lousy one, I can tell you that. I go work for a local regional restaurant group. You know, in Boston there, you know, got to be 10 or 15 of these people that are every year opening up one or two new restaurants.
Yeah.
That really understand how to run a restaurant. They're really, really good at it, and I've learned. And I, you know, I take different jobs and I move between locations and I learn. And then, after I've learned a lot, built a great plan, determined how my restaurant would be unique and different, I understand how to negotiate rents with landlords, I understand, you know, where good locations are, and I know all these things, then I start my own restaurant.
Right. It was interesting because my son, when he finished college, was going into a startup, and Tim Draper said to him, before you do anything, go and get yourself 3 or 4 years experience at one of the big four or three or whatever there is now. You know, make sure you understand how business works from top to bottom and how the financial side of a business works. Then think about going into something if you want to. So he went to Deloitte's and spent a number of years at Deloitte's and then went to Google, and he said that was the smartest thing he ever did, because by the time he went to Google, he really knew, you know, what the hell he was doing. And that's pretty good advice,
you know,
for everybody, I think.
It is. You know, I'll throw in a little advice too. You know, if you work in a family business and the family business is doing well and you're enjoying working in the family business, quit. go work for somebody else for a while and come back to the family business. Because, you know, the problem in your family business that you worked in your entire life is that's what you know.
Yeah.
And if you really want to help, if the family business is doing well and, you know, your parents are still running it and there's plenty of time, if you go and work at a couple other businesses, when you come back to that family business, you're going to be able to add so much more to the business and help that business grow to new levels.
Yeah, but totally if you stay there, perspective, yeah.
Yeah, well, you stay there. You know, there's the ham story, which you probably heard, but just for some of the listeners that haven't heard, and it's really nothing about ham. It could be just about anything.
Yeah.
But you know, this couple's over, and the family, the hostess is serving a ham. The ham's delicious. It says, you know, what do you do? How do you cook your ham? What makes it better? And the hostess says, I really have no idea. The only thing I really do that's different is I cut 2 inches off the ham on the end.
Right.
And why do you do that? And don't know. And they call the mother and they go, mother, why do you do that? Well, I don't know. That's what my mother always said. That's why they call the grandmother. And the grandmother says, well, hams are normally 14 inches. My pot was 12. So I had to cut off 2 inches to get fit in the pot. And dutifully, they're cutting 2 inches off a ham for no reason at all, except for that's how it's always been done.
Yeah.
And, you know, which really, you know, brings me to, you know, another very valid point for successful businesses. Always got to rethink your business. You know, you always have to sit back and say to yourself, hey, if I was going to open up a business and put myself out of business, what would I do? And then once you know what you do to put yourself out of business, do it first before someone else does it.
Yeah.
Particularly which today. I think
it's really important today. So many people, businesses are getting disrupted that you've got to really stay ahead of the game.
Yeah. Rethink everything. Challenge everything. Don't let everything be a ham. You know, why are you doing it? I always do it. Why you do this? I always do it. Always. You know, that's the worst reason to do something.
Yeah.
Do something because it's the right and best thing to do in the business and challenge yourself.
Evan, we're really running out of time. So I really want to thank you very much for speaking with me on the Bob Pritchard Radio Show. Now, if you want to hire Evan as a speaker, visit evanhackelspeaks.com. That's EvanHackel speaks, speaks.com. But make sure you don't hire him before you hire me, because that would be a big mistake. But he's a great speaker.
How about you hire both of us?
Hire both of us. There's the go. We could do a great dog and pony show, I reckon. Thank you very much.
I also, on that website, if you go there, even if you don't want to hire me to speak, if you look at my articles and podcasts, there's a wealth of knowledge. And, of course, by my book, Engaging Leadership with an I.
Yeah.
It would be fun, Bob, to speak together sometime.
It'd be great. I'd enjoy that.
Yeah.
So thanks very much. And I'll be back with more of the Bob Pritchard Radio Show on Voice America Business Network after this short break.